Coming up on July's episode of the Canada Connection, Andrew takes time to talk about what's happening in Lansing as lawmakers pack up and head back to the district for their summer in-district work period. He also takes a few minutes to talk about what's happening in D.C. and some exciting involvements there. This month, we welcome two guests as we talk about biomarker testing. First, we'll welcome Nadia Huck from the Genentech biomarker testing team. She gives us a little lay of the land and a better understanding of what biomarker testing is. We also welcome Dr. Anthony Shields from the Kamanos Cancer Institute, and he talks about how biomarkers are being utilized in the field in terms of treating patients and how it's helping in the fight against cancer. This month, we also welcome guest host Jennifer Kosten, the state lead ambassador here for Michigan. She pinch hits with Andrew in terms of going through the issues happening here in Michigan and on the federal level. I'm Andrew Sheppers, and this is the Canada Connection, brought to you by Kamanos Cancer Institute and McLaren Healthcare, the largest provider of cancer research and cancer care in the state. Jenny, happy July. Thanks for joining us today in terms of being our special guest host. How's your summer looking so far?
Baseball just wrapped up, so we get to relax. We're going to the UP next week. It's going to be good.
Very nice. Well, now's the time to get out and make sure you're wearing sunscreen, right? If you're going to be out in the sun, make sure you've got that sunscreen with you. Skin cancer, definitely preventable. So make sure you get lathered up while you're out there. But with that, a lot of happening in Lansing as lawmakers are really looking to kind of wind down as they get into their summer recess, or as they like to call it, summer in district period. And so they can spend time back in their districts. But let's really talk about oral chemo here a little bit, and knowing that we've been working with the chair of the Senate Health Policy Committee, and he's really given us a signal that the fall we're going to go ahead and work on some of these issues. But I really feel like there's a lot of work that has to happen in the districts and really spending time with senators. And I know, Jenny, you've been a part of many of those meetings. And so, what are those meetings really like when you're sitting down talking with members of the House or Senate? Are they fairly receptive? Is this a real good time to meet with them? Or are they kind of in recess mode in terms of working on issues?
They actually are in district. My state senator was actually in my hometown of Merrill last week.
Oh my gosh.
And my daughter and I went to go and chat with him at our local library. Okay. It was actually a packed house. So people are busy and being active, but definitely listening to what we have to say about oral chemo. And thank goodness he's still supportive.
Well, that's good. That's good. It's good to hear. And for those that are looking for more information, head to fightcancer.org/fairness to get some of our up-to-date information. And that's where we'll also be posting our resources for summer activities. So make sure you head to that website, fightcancer.org/fairness, as we talk about oral chemo fairness here this summer. One of the big things the legislature has been looking to really kind of wrap up as they finish getting to that July 4th holiday is the state budget. And I don't think people know that there is a statutorily set date that they have to have the budget done now, which is July 1. And typically, budget negotiations could go all the way until the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th. But folks in the legislature said, we need to make sure that we can get it done beforehand so that our school districts can know what to plan on. I know, Jenny, that's big for you guys, understanding what funds are coming in and what isn't. But, you know, also it kind of gives folks the ability to plan and ready for the next fiscal year. And so in really a surprising move, where we were a couple weeks ago from where we are today, we really didn't think the budget was going to get done in time. And the Senate actually passed legislation that would move that implementation date from July 1, 2021 to July 1, 2022, to kind of really give them that buffer. But now it sounds like folks are coming back together. And it sounds like we may have a deal here by the time, by the time folks are going to hear this podcast, which is good. And I think it'll give a little bit of comfort for folks in there. Of course, we have our ask in there as well, for the $200,000, and it's going to make a huge impact, Jenny, in terms of helping those that are really looking to try to quit tobacco, right?
Absolutely. And I am thankful yet again that both of mine are super supportive of that, given one of them is usually against tobacco stuff. But this is definitely something that's going to make a big difference for Michiganders who are trying to quit tobacco and have actual resources to help them.
Absolutely. And I think just to know that when they call 1-800-QUIT-NOW, somebody's going to be there to pick up the phone. Which is awesome. And so, you know, we're really excited and hopefully to see that extra $200,000 put into the budget, as they kind of move forward here. But as we talk about tobacco a little bit, Jenny, there's been one other package that's been introduced, and I know that you spent some time a little bit advocating on this and sending in some notes to your members of the House and Senate. But there's a five-bill package that mirrored a package from last term that really talks about how we're going to regulate e-cigarettes, how we're going to tax them, how we're going to license our retailers, and how we're going to really move forward with all of that. Last term, this was a package of bills that we fought against. And now knowing that, we find ourselves in a situation where the same pieces of legislation have been introduced once again. And so, it's just a whole bunch of hurdles coming down the road in terms of packages that are package bills that really may look good on the face of it, but may really have a lot of holes in terms of providing a lot of outs for those selling tobacco, especially to those underage. And so if I'm not mistaken, right, Jenny, this is an effort that's really being led by the tobacco industry, isn't it?
Absolutely it is, but it's finally nice to know that we could have some e-cigarette legislation around here, and so we are going to make sure that big tobacco doesn't have as big of a voice as we do.
That's right. Absolutely. And so, this is a package that we'll be monitoring and actually fighting against as we kind of move forward in the process here. But I would also expect some type of legislative solution coming from ACS CAN, along with our coalition partners at the American Heart Association, American Lung, and others to really make sure that we have good comprehensive legislative solutions put forward to really make sure that we're protecting those from tobacco. So we'll be monitoring that, just kind of watch as we go through with some of these issues as the fall approaches. But on a federal level, there has been some activity, and actually activity that you've been engaged with, Jenny, dealing with the federal breast cancer prevention program. I don't know, Jenny, if you could kind of give us a little bit of update in terms of what has happened with that and what some of the outcomes have been.
Sure. So during the Memorial Day recess, all leads, ACT leads in Michigan and across the nation were asked to contact with members of Congress and get a $275 million budget item in there for our National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program. So that'll be fiscal year 2022.
Okay.
And here in Michigan, we had a decent response from our ACT leads reaching out. Some of them called offices, some of them emailed. Those that emailed got an email back saying, yes, we understand, and yes, we're supportive of it, which is always great to hear. And we have at least two or three members that are on appropriations or will be a part of this process when it goes through budget talks.
Okay. So
we have a real impact that we can make here in Michigan and making sure that that funding is attached to the 2022 bill.
Well, that's great. It's great to hear. And I think it really kind of falls in line in terms of what we've been seeing on a federal level over the past several years in terms of their continued support in research, along with doing prevention program funding. So exciting news in terms of making sure that folks that really need the support are getting it. Knowing that Michigan and their state program has been one of the leaders in this area for quite some time now. So excited news. Other exciting news coming on the federal level is that the Supreme Court upheld the Affordable Care Act once again.
I know.
It's great news as other attempts were taken by states around the country to kind of tear down the bill, since there was no mandate associated with it anymore, and the Supreme Court said no and upheld those provisions, which a lot of people rely on. I can tell you, close to 900,000 people here in the state of Michigan use the Medicaid expansion program so that they can get access to health insurance. And so it's critical for here in our state, but around the country as well. And so another huge win in terms of protecting these vital provisions for our patients. And so so I'm sure more to come, right? As there always is. With the Affordable Care Act, but hopefully the more to come is all good stuff. So
2021's our year. I keep saying it. Things are moving.
I know. Finally, we've all kind of come out of hibernation, right? So it's nice to see some stuff moving. But talking about things moving, let's talk about Lights of Hope a little bit. And so we are in the full throes of Lights of Hope right now, aren't we, Jenny?
We absolutely are. We just had a challenge a few weeks ago, and one of our members, Jay Kaliski, was one of the top in the nation for fundraising, which is awesome. And as of last week, we are number three in our region. We're just behind Ohio and Illinois. So, hey, we're on the leaderboard.
Heck yeah, Michigan representing once again. We always kind of seem to be up around the top of the leaderboard, which I know is a sense of, you know, it's I have a small corner of pride for that. But I'm sure it just provides a ton of motivation for everybody else, doesn't it?
It does. And we're even in the top 10 for the nation. So these next challenges are going to come up. Let's keep moving Michigan forward.
Yeah.
We've got the ability.
Yep. So if those that are interested in Lights of Hope, you want more information or getting involved, take a look at what's scrolling down on the bottom of the screen. Go to action.fightcancer.org/go-to/MI-Lights-of-Hope. I know it's a real big address there, but if you want more information, want to get involved in our Lights of Hope program, I tell you, it is one of the coolest experiences that I've ever been a part of in this organization. Seeing the reflecting pool around the between the Lincoln Memorial and Washington Monument all lit up with all these luminaria bags, it's really an awesome tribute to those that are fighting cancer or who have unfortunately lost their fight. So again, head to the address here on the bottom, action.fightcancer.org/go-to/MI-Lights-of-Hope to get more information and to get involved. Another thing that has been happening is that we've been having a book club here in Michigan, and so a really great way for volunteers to kind of get involved and understand maybe to have a deeper conversation and better understand the topics, right, Jenny?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we had a book club where we talked about White Fragility was the book of topic this time.
Right.
And so it's really starting to talk about diversity and how we as a group here in Michigan can expand and be much more, diverse is the thing, but looking like Michigan.
Yeah.
So that our better represents what is in Michigan and how we can have those conversations and be a part of groups that maybe are outside of our comfort level and being aware of our own bias when we're having conversations or making generalizations about different groups of people. And we actually are going to put up resources on our volunteer page. So it'll have some book choices that people can read so that we can keep this conversation moving.
Awesome. So if you want more information about that, head to fightcancer.org/MI. That's our homepage, fightcancer.org/MI, to get more information about book club and other activities and everything else we're going on. I want you to know the book club is definitely Maddie approved, as Maddie has joined our show as well. We always love having Maddie on the show. Glad to hear that she enjoyed that. So, with that, we are going to, here after the break, have a great conversation talking about biomarker testing. I think a lot of folks may hear biomarker testing and want to know what that's all about. And so we're going to sit down with a couple folks that have been working in the biomarker testing space here in Michigan and beyond. And they're going to kind of give us a rundown and really a better understanding of what biomarker testing is. Join us here after the break as we sit down and have that discussion.
At Carmanis, we specialize in providing cancer care that you can't get anywhere else. Because we're home to one of the largest clinical trials programs in the country, only Carmanis can give you access to more than 250 of the most innovative and promising cancer treatments available. And with locations across Michigan and virtual visits, we offer easy and safe access to the expertise and guidance of your cancer team. We do all of this for one reason: to give you your best chance.
Welcome back. And thanks for joining us again here. We're going to start our discussions here with a couple folks that have really been working in the biomarker testing space. We had an opportunity to sit down with them earlier this month. And so here's our conversation about biomarker testing here in Michigan. So biomarker testing has been an issue that's been kind of hot and popular here over the past few years, at least in the policy realm, but really it's been a practice that's been around for quite some time. And so today we're really excited to welcome Nadia Huck to the show today. She is part of the biomarker testing team with Genentech. Hey, Nadia, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you taking the time.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so biomarker testing, it's something that has been around for a while, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has. Decades, really, in multiple disease states. Yep.
Gotcha. And so, when we talk about biomarker testing, let's kind of break that down a little bit. And you know, what are biomarkers and why are we really testing for them?
Yeah, great question. And I think sort of before we talk about biomarkers specifically, even to take a further step back, I thought we could maybe define what personalized healthcare is or what you may hear called precision medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So precision medicine is really an approach to healthcare based on a person's unique genetic makeup. So I may react differently to a certain drug than you, or my genes may cause me to have certain diseases or have risk factors for certain diseases compared to another person in the population. And precision medicine sort of attempts to understand those genetic differences to help diagnose and treat disease more precisely, if you will. Wow. So in many instances, the practice of medicine, sort of like where able, is moving towards a one-size-fits-all approach to a very specific targeted treatment based on a patient's genetic makeup. And so if we want to paint that picture further, even with an example, just about everyone we know has been affected by breast cancer, let's say.
Yeah.
And so when a person's diagnosed with breast cancer, there's multiple subtypes of breast cancer. Many of them are broken down into different genetic classifications. So you may have a gene that causes a protein that overgrows and causes cancer in your body. Or if other genes are not working properly, that could cause diseases like cystic fibrosis. So, you know, there's multiple sort of like disease realms and things that we see this in. So if we sort of break that down further now into the biomarkers and how that applies. Biomarkers are lab tests that we obtain under the umbrella term of what we call precision medicine or personalized healthcare. Okay. And we can measure those biomarkers in blood, we can measure it in tissue, bodily fluids. If you have cancer, you can measure certain biomarkers in a tumor. And these biomarkers tell us what genes or other lab markers are normal or abnormal that could be causing the diseases that we're talking about. So if we stick with that breast cancer example that we talked about earlier, that breast cancer patient could have their cancer tissue or the tumor tissue tested for certain biomarkers to tell us the genetic makeup of that cancer.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that the results of that biomarker test would then allow us to potentially find the most accurate treatment for the patient's cancer. So really, biomarkers help us treat the right patient with the right treatment at the right time.
Gotcha. So I maybe break it down in layman's terms, it sounds like it's maybe a doctor getting a MapQuest printed off directions in terms of like how to go for treatment for any type of disease, right?
Yeah, absolutely. How do you get from A to B, which B is hopefully a cure or, you know, treatment of the disease. Exactly.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
So this has been going on for a while, and knowing that, I think your research has shown that we've found a lot of specific uniqueness in terms of disease and among people. And so now, is this type of testing more commonplace now that physicians are using, or is this more of a new type of emerging testing?
No, it's actually very common, and you know, in multiple areas. So, you know, when you sort of really break it down to what the definition of a biomarker is, even things like blood glucose or blood cholesterol are actually considered biomarkers. They're lab tests that we act on in many ways, and so so those are sort of like the more, you know, universal biomarkers that aren't necessarily related to specific genes and genetics, but there are, you know, very specific genetic biomarkers and very rare diseases as well. So it sort of like spans the whole practice of medicine, and it is very common. And, you know, biomarkers can tell us how we may respond to a specific treatment, like we talked about. So within cancer, there may be a medicine then that targets that specific gene abnormality. So that's one very sort of like common way in cancer, but there's other uses as well. So, to use a couple somewhat technical terms, and I'll try to break them down. Biomarkers can be diagnostic. So biomarkers could help us detect disease before we may even have evidence of disease. So you may have heard that there's a test that measures DNA in a patient's stool to see if they could, if they might have colon cancer. It helps detect for colon cancer. So that's considered a diagnostic biomarker. There's things called prognostic biomarkers that give us information about the outcome of a disease. So many of us have heard about the BRCA or the BRCA gene that gives us information about breast cancer. There's predictive biomarkers, and that gives us information about the effect of a certain drug or therapy. And that could be that target for therapy. So if we find an abnormal gene, like HER2 is an example in breast cancer, mm-hmm. that we see in breast cancer or other tumor types, a drug that targets HER2, that biomarker HER2 would be considered predictive in that space. Lung cancer has multiple biomarkers identified. It's basically standard of care now to be testing in lung cancer multiple biomarkers, multiple other cancers and other disease states as well.
Gotcha. So, well, and that leads me into my next question is, you know, we talk about this a little bit, and we've really kind of focused in on cancer. And of course, you know, being at the American Cancer Society, that's our main focus is on cancer. But can you use these tests in maybe other disease states in terms of being able to find markers for something outside the cancer realm?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And it's really sort of a very big area of research in just about every area of medicine nowadays. It can be used to help diagnose or in the treatment of heart disease, neurology, rheumatoid disease, diabetes, cystic fibrosis, like we mentioned, just to name a few. But cancer is obviously a very large group that we have very specific medicines that target those biomarkers. But let's just use neurology for an example. Looking at levels of biomarkers in the brain, for instance, may help us understand what types of patients are more at risk for diseases like Alzheimer's. And, you know, might there be treatments that target those biomarkers to help in the treatment of Alzheimer's? Wow. So they're really guiding treatment for all types of therapies and making that treatment more precise. Additionally, another sort of like emerging area is in just drug therapy. So biomarkers can be used to see how a patient may respond to a certain drug. If they're, you know, if a person's genes might cause them to have more side effects or need their drug dosing altered, biomarkers can help with that as well.
Gosh, it's fascinating stuff. And just to know, it sounds like that this has been going on for quite some time. You know, if you're a patient, are there hurdles kind of in place for folks around this in terms of getting testing? Or is this, again, just commonplace for everyone to utilize these tests?
It's probably a little bit of both. So
it seems to be the case for everything, right?
That's true. We want, you know, in many cases, they're standard of care and they're written into the guidelines and they're done, you know, all the time, like cholesterol and blood glucose, like we talked about. Or if a patient has lung cancer or breast cancer, most of these biomarkers are common. But there are often newer emerging biomarkers that, you know, the guidelines are, let's say, new and people have to be educated about them, or insurance changes, you know, and reimbursement has to sort of catch up with the emerging science of it all.
Gotcha. Well, you know, Nadia, thank you so much. And I know that this is fascinating stuff. And I know you've got the opportunity here in September to provide more information to our legislature here in Lansing. And you've graciously accepted our offer to help and present to folks in Lansing. So thank you for that. But again, you know, thanks for coming on the show and really talking about biomarkers and really it sounds like some exciting stuff yet to come.
It was my pleasure and looking forward to September. Thanks, Andrew.
Awesome. Thanks, Nadia.
Coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Dr. Anthony Shields to continue our discussion on biomarker testing. ACS CAN Michigan is excited to announce its 2021 policy forum, The Faces of Cancer, where we're going to take a look at access issues that cancer patients are facing here in Michigan. Our forum will be on September 30th, 2021, from noon to 1 Eastern, and is a virtual event. We're excited to welcome our keynote speaker as well, Dr. Sabrina Ford from Michigan State University. She's going to share insight on her research and what she's seen in terms of barriers of access for folks here in Michigan. We hope you can join us. Head to fightcancer.org/MIFaces to get more information or register today.
Welcome back. And now joining us to further our conversation about biomarker testing is Dr. Anthony Shields. Dr. Shields is the Associate Center Director for Clinical Sciences at the Barbara Ann Karmanos Cancer Institute, along with a professor of medicine and oncology at Wayne State University School of Medicine. Dr. Shields, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you taking the time.
It's certainly my pleasure. I'm always happy to bring information to people about cancer and its treatment.
Awesome. Well, you know, just a moment ago, we had an opportunity to chat with Nadia Huck, who is a part of the biomarker testing account team at Genentech. And she really kind of talked about just kind of the basics of biomarker testing and how long it's been around and really kind of set a foundation for us. We're excited that you're on today because we're really interested in also hearing how biomarker testing is really being used in the field. And so I was wondering if you could kind of talk about just for a few minutes here, how you and your colleagues are utilizing biomarker testing when you're meeting with patients.
Okay. Well, you have to understand biomarker testing in one form or another has been around for decades.
Okay. I
mean, breast cancer, it's, you know, whether there's a receptor for female hormones, estrogen or progesterone receptor, has been part of the standard of care for many, many, many years.
Okay.
And so when you say that a woman's got breast cancer, that's the first thing you say after that is whether it had those particular biomarkers. It's expanded amazingly since then. And now at Karmanos, as part of our routine care, in many of our patients, we test 22,000 genes. Basically every gene in the body in some of our patients.
Wow.
So it's really gone a long, long way. Now, many of our patients, you know, we don't find something in that that's very helpful, but in a good fraction of them, we do. You have to understand that cancer isn't one disease, and we used to say it was 100, and now it's thousands. And and when you start to subdivide it, not just based on where it came from the body and what it looks like under the microscope, but we look at the genetic panel to say, you know, how is this going to behave? Are there particular targets for many of our new agents that really go after particular genes in any given patient? And so it's really part of the standard of care for most of our patients to run these panels and look for genes that we have drugs for. And we're getting better at using those panels to actually say, do our standard drugs even work? So we use biomarker panels. For instance, I treat a lot of patients with colorectal cancer, and we use the panel to say that our standard drugs, we've got a few to choose from, which of those are going to be better than others.
Gotcha.
So it's really, you know, an amazing field. You know, some patients with early cancer, we don't run them. But even in those cases, you know, for instance, you know, if we have an early pancreatic cancer and we're just going to give them standard chemotherapy and or surgery, we run panels to see if it's inherited.
Okay.
So part of our panels are to look at inherited cancers. About 5 to 10% of cancer has some inherited component that we can identify. And it's important to know it for the patient and for their family.
Gotcha. So it sounds like this has really kind of revolutionized the way that you've been treating patients and really kind of honing in on their cancer. Because of this testing, I mean, it sounds like treatments have changed. Kind of what have those treatment changes really looked like? I think traditionally when people think cancer treatment, they think, you know, an IV chemo bag and in a hospital. But are there other treatment forms, maybe an oral, maybe selective surgery or radiation or whatnot that have really, that this testing has allowed you to do now?
Certainly. In lung cancer, for instance, in patients with advanced lung cancer, as you said, the standard in the past was generally a couple different chemotherapeutic agents that were given by Bain. Now we run those tests upfront in our patients. And a fraction of those patients have particular genetic changes, and they go by initials, EGFR or ALK or things like that.
Okay.
And we have drugs that are oral agents that specifically target those, and they work very, very well. And patients basically go home, and that's our first line therapy for many of those patients, is they go home on these oral agents that can really shrink these tumors and control them. And we have patients that were on some of the early trials for some of these drugs that we ran at Karmanos, and they're still on them years later. I mean, the tumor may not have disappeared, but it's been controlled for many, many years in some of those patients.
Wow, that's amazing stuff. So let's kind of maybe address the elephant in the room a little bit. And when it comes to some patients, cost can really be prohibitive in terms of being able to get treatment forms or maybe go down the testing road. You know, with your experience of dealing with your patients, how big is cost an issue for them in terms of getting access to this type of testing?
For the most part, it's covered by insurance. I always warn people when I send off these tests that there may be co-pays for a few hundred dollars, but many times those are waived.
Okay. So
the testing itself, one of our big panels now that runs 22,000 genes, is about $3,000 overall.
Okay.
You have to understand that 10 or 15 years ago, if you wanted to do that in the first human being, it cost literally billions of dollars.
Wow.
And it's really gotten to be much more affordable that we can basically do it in every patient coming forward. Unfortunately, our drugs cost fortunes. It's not uncommon that the drugs we use, those targeted agents, can cost $10,000 a month. Fortunately, those are generally covered by insurance. But that's why the test is really relatively inexpensive compared to the cost of my drugs. So if I know that a drug's going to work or not work, I can save a lot of money for a patient to say, this series of agents isn't going to work. This one's more likely to work, plus saving them the toxicity of an agent that isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And the fact that their tumor's growing on something that doesn't work and they may be in bad shape in the end. So in the long run, I think those tests clearly save us money, as well as finding better ways for us to treat our patients.
Well, it sounds like a ton of exciting stuff. We're going to provide a presentation to lawmakers here in Michigan come September around this issue. So it's a great time for us to have this conversation. Again, joining me is Dr. Anthony Shields from the Barbara Ann Karmanos Cancer Institute and Wayne State University School of Medicine. Dr. Shields, thank you so much for spending a few moments with me today talking about this very important issue of biomarker testing.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Take good care.
Thank you. Again, that was Dr. Anthony Shields from the Barbara Ann Karmanos Cancer Institute, along with Wayne State University School of Medicine. All right. Well, I don't know about you, Jenny, but I felt like the conversation and just learning more about biomarker testing, it sounds like exciting stuff, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Let's see what we can make happen here in Michigan.
That's right. That's right. I know Illinois has had some success recently in ensuring that biomarker testing can be available for folks. So we'll have to see what happens here in Michigan. But yet, I think it sounds like it's definitely vital and critical in terms of treating cancer and ensuring that patients get the right treatment at the right time. So, well, Jenny, you've survived your first podcast. What do you think?
And Maddie even made an appearance. Oh, my goodness.
I know. Well, again, we love Maddie being on the show. She's one of her favorites. Always, always, always. So, well, I appreciate you taking some time and joining us today and co-hosting the podcast with us. Hopefully, we'll have a grassroots manager here in Michigan by the time August comes around. But again, thank you for taking the time to co-host and co-wrangle the show with me today.
Hey, not a problem. Some big shoes to fill. So hopefully our grassroots manager can step in there.
Well, you know, I've got a good feeling that hopefully we're going to find somebody that can. So, well, again, thank you all for joining us. Make sure you join us in August, where we're going to have a great conversation. It's going to be a longer interview with the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services Director, Elizabeth Hertel. We're going to be talking about COVID-19, the impact it's had on Michigan, but really focusing in on cancer, right? So what the department plans to do to get folks back in and to see the doctor and get screening, along with a host of other issues that may come up. So make sure you join us next month. But with that, thanks for joining us here in July, and we'll see you next month.